factors. Number one factor is that nobody had any idea what I was talking about at the end of Shiras today. But the Balamu and the Ramban, so I wanted guys to get a chance to catch up. Number two, it's Purim Kotlin today, so you only get it once in a couple of years to talk about that. So, guys have been working hard. It's ready halfway through the week. Okay. We haven't had a special show in a long time. No, it's our look. It's hard to, turned down the opportunity to speak a little bit about the Sugya Purim Kotlin, because we're probably not going to talk about it for a couple of years, so we'll see if we can be out to our obligation today, and then we'll lead us directly into our Purim Kotlin lunch and grandiose celebration, assuming that the pizza arrives, okay? So we're all looking forward to positive things. The Sugya Purim Kotlin begins in the first parak of Maseches Megillah, where the Gemara already raises the problem, the Mishnah already raises the issue. You have a Shalom Uberes, such as this year, which is considered to be the real Adar vis-a-vis the mitzvah of Kriyas Megillah, vis-a-vis all the other mitzvahs, Hanagos Bepurim. So strangely enough, the Gemara quotes a Brais, that quotes a Machlokes. Is that the Rambam about this? This is far from agreed upon. This Man Azel, it's already been agreed upon for the last 2,000 years, but in the days of Tanaim, we're still being debated what the din is, whether one is supposed to celebrate Purim in the first Adar, whether one is supposed to celebrate Purim in the second Adar. When I went to shul this morning, it was so cold, I thought to myself, it was so not Purim weather outside, so Baruch Hashem, we pass like the second Adar. But according to the first Adar, who says that you celebrate Purim in the first Adar, so why should that be so? What is the Nekudas HaMachlokes? What are they fighting about? So the Gemara presents two different stadiums. The Gemara presents to defend the Tana that says in the first Adar, then the Tana that the way we pass in the second Adar. The Tana that says in the first Adar, the Gemara says it's based on the principle of Eim Avir Nala Mitzvahs. When you have the opportunity to do a mitzvah, you're supposed to do it right away. You're not supposed to push it off for some other reason. You're not supposed to opt to do it at another time. You're supposed to do it at the first possibility. So the starting point of the sug is that in theory, either one of the two others would be acceptable. Either one would be called celebrating Purim in Chodesh Adar. But in terms of the klal of a mitzvah, so we have a rule called Eim Avir Nala Mitzvahs. This is not the first time we bumped into Eim Avir Nala Mitzvahs in Shas. Probably the most famous application of this principle is the Gemara that appears in Maseches Yuma. The Gemara tells us, based on Psukim, that you have to put on the Shal Yad before the Shal Rosh, because the Torah says so. Those are the first Benemecha. The Gemara says there are two dinim diaraisa that are derived from this pasuk in terms of the Seidat Dvarim of putting on tefillin, that you have to put the Shal Yad before the Shal Rosh, and you have to take off the Shal Rosh before you take off the Shal Yad, because the Torah says, V'hoyu tatavus Benemecha, V'man Shebenemecha Yushnai. You're always supposed to have two. When you have tefillin on your head, there was supposed to be a tefillin on your arm as well. If a person, let's say, has a broken arm, a person can't put tefillin on their arm, so they have no choice, then they have to put tefillin on their own, so then the din doesn't apply to them. But for a person who has the ability to wear both, then you have to always be wearing both. You can't have a shel rosh without having a shel yad on. You have to put the shel yad on first, and you have to take off the shel rosh first. The Gemara says that a person has to be careful when they put away the shel yad and the shel rosh at the end of the day, and they're going to have it ready for tomorrow morning, so they have to be careful to position the tefillin in such a way that they're going to bump into the shel yad before they bump into the shel rosh. Because if they'll take the shel rosh out of the bag first, that's going to be a big problem. Then they're going to be in a pickle. Because on the one hand, there's a din min haTorah, ukshat milsa yadach, you have to put in the shel yad first. On the other hand, there's a din of eim avir nala mitzvahs, you're not supposed to pass up with doing a mitzvah. The guy's going to be mamish in a quadri, he's got to figure out what to do, so he's supposed to avoid that. You're not supposed to set up such a situation, you're supposed to be careful to position the shel yad accordingly, that you put on the shel yad before the shel rosh, and therefore you should bump into the shel yad before the shel rosh, because ein mavirin ala mitzvos. It's for this reason that the poskim point out the same is true when it comes to talis and tefillin. We shut him right that our practice is we put on the talis before we put on our tefillin, which is also a big chiddush why we do that. That's a whole tumul in the poskim why that's even true, but that's the minhag Yisrael, is you put on the talis before the tefillin. Those who are wearing a talis also should position their tefillin in such a way, the tefillin, the talis bag, that they every morning they bump into the talis first, and then afterwards they bump into the tefillin also, not to be in violation of Eim Avir Nala Mitzvah. So this is a real din, Eim Avir Nala Mitzvah. The Rishonim seem to say this is a din in HaTorah, the Rishonim discuss it in terms of potential Efkimin is Deraisa. There is such a principle called Eim Avir Nala Mitzvah. So the Gemara says that because of this rule of Eim Avirin HaMitzvah, therefore one Tana was of the opinion that you celebrate Purim in the first of the two others. So the Sheikh Isari in his Perush on Maseches Megillah in Sefer Tur Yevin points out that this seems to be a very, very strange application of that rule of Eim Avirin HaMitzvah. Because usually Eim Avirin HaMitzvah means when you have two different mitzvahs, let's say Abishal Yad, Abishal Rosh, or you have a Talis and a Tefillin. That's called Eim Avirin HaMitzvah. So here, it's the same mitzvah. It's just a question of when am I going to perform it. So it's not which mitzvah I'm going to perform first. It's not that I'm passing over one mitzvah to get to another mitzvah. It's the same mitzvah. It's just a question of when am I going to do it. So the Sheikh Isari says there's a different rule for that klal. What's that called? That's called the reason of mitzvahs. That's not the aim of yom mitzvahs. So why did the Gemara use a strange phrase of aim of yom mitzvahs? The Gemara should have said that the Tanu says you're laying in the first order because it's reads like the Yom HaMitzvahs. So Sheikh Isari has a very difficult pshat. He says, I don't know chinami, that's what the Gemara meant. The Gemara was just lishna bi'amu, which is using a very, you know, colloquial phrase, Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs. But the Gemara didn't really mean it, because this is not the correct application of that principle, because this is much closer to Zrizim than in this Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs. It's a bechidish godol from the Sheikh Isari. The Ma'aseh, the Gemara uses the phrase. We usually assume that Chazal meant what they said. So this is a very, very hard, the Sheikh Isari.
Is that a real din, or is that just like a
meat of din? It's what a real din. No, it's a real din. Well, they're from Sukkot. They ask about my bucket. You want Pesach on that dollar? Anyone learn Pesach on one of these years? When did they learn Pesach on this year? Who knows when? 2 years from now.
2 years from now.
Unless they outvote that also. Okay. So, as of now, we're learning Pesach. So that's a real din. Well, they're from Sukkot. It's a real halacha. So at the end of the day, the Gemara quotes one time that says that's in fact what we do. So, but we know that that's not the case. We know that we follow the other opinion. We follow the view that says that you lay in the second order. Why do we follow the second order? What happened to Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs? The Gemara says, no, the other Tanaim is of the opinion that Mesbach Ula Gula Adif. That if you're going to lay in the first order, then you're going to run into a big problem. You're going to have a 2 month break till Pesach, and that's not good. Why? Because the Gula of Purim, the Gula of Pesach, is supposed to be as close to one another as possible. So because of that consideration, we're willing to forego Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs. And we're willing to go to fulfill Sbichas Gula Gula, that's more important for us. What do you see from this Gemara? That the second time was of the opinion that Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs is not an absolute. It's not the Chayt Lo Yav Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs. Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs means that if all else is equal and you have nothing to gain by pushing off the mitzvah, so then you do the mitzvah at the earliest possible time. But if you're going to lose out something by being Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs, then you don't. So that's what the poskim point out, it was tefillin. That let's say push comes to shove, the guy took out the shorosh before the shoyad. So what should he do? Tachlis. Right now he picked up the shorosh. What do you want him to do? So the post came out, he should put it down and put on the shoyad. I gavalt Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs. So the answer is it's going to be a problem to put on the shorosh first because that's going to impact on other halachas. It's going to be a bit of the pasuk of kshat meosei adecha. It's going to be a bit of the din v'hoyel to tafas ben adecha b'zman shu shnayim. So he's going to lose. So Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs is not an absolute chayt lo yav. Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs says if all else is equal, then you do the first mitzvah, you bump into first. But if you have other considerations that are more important, so then those other considerations will outweigh Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs. That's exactly what the second Tana said. The second Tana was of the opinion that idea of Mesbach Gula Gula is very, very important, and therefore it overrides Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs. What did the first Tana hold? Apparently the first time held that, that's irrelevant. Sbichas Gula Gula. What does that have to do with anything? It's a nice drasha. It's a nice thing for a sermon on a Shabbos morning, but that's not a halachic concern. And apparently the second time was of the opinion, no, that is a halachic issue. That there's something about Purim and Pesach that we have to have the gulas one next to another.
What time
do
you see that the other
Tana
held that, you know, every moment just really is a deal, is even if, not just when all else fails, when everything else is equal, but even if we're going
to
have other things in the way.
So that's hard to believe because there are other rabbis. I mean, that Tana would disagree with the Din of Chutzpilim and he would disagree with everything else. Maybe he'll Din of Yom Mitzvah. There's an absolute quick way out of it. Maybe. So what is this Sbichas Gula Gula? What's so special about it? It's so unbelievable. It becomes the source of how we pass in the halacha, that we observe Purim and other Sheni. It's overriding Eim Avirin HaMitzvahs. It's beating out everything else. What is it all about? What's this Sbichas Gula Gula? What is this deep iron connection between Purim and Pesach? So there is a very famous Gemara. We spoke about this many times over the years. There's a famous Gemara in Megillah Daf Yudalim and Aleph, where the Gemara raises a question about the very celebration of Purim. The Gemara raises the objection, how did the Chacham in the days of Purim institute Purim that seemed to be a violation of something? There was some kind of an issur involved in celebrating Purim, and Chazal figured out why it's not a problem. What was the problem to start with? So the Gemara says it has something to do with adding on to mitzvahs. The Gemara says that that until the days of Purim, nobody ever thought of adding on another mitzvah. And now all of a sudden, we're adding on new mitzvahs, and that poses the challenge. We have to overcome that challenge. What is the challenge? What's the name of that issur that Chazal are referring to? So the Ramban, in his Perush on Chumash in Parshas Baschanan, quotes this Gemara in Megillat Daf Yud Aleph, and Yerushalmi elaborates it also. And the Ramban writes that the problem, the challenge that Chazal opposed with, was a violation of Baal Tosef, that you're adding on to mitzvahs the same way. You're not allowed to put five batim in your tefillin, you're not allowed to take five minim in your esrog, you're not allowed to, according to some Rishon Mikian, add on extra strings to your tzitzis. So the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah Kavches, the Kohen can't add on another bracha to Bichas Kohenim, that you're not allowed to add on to mitzvahs. And the Ramban says that adding on to mitzvahs doesn't only mean to take a chavta shel mitzvah and add a component to it, but adding on to mitzvahs means to make up a new mitzvah. If you would decide one day that we're going to have a 614th mitzvah, everyone basically would get up and say, everyone's got to stand on the head and do a jumping jacks and stand upside down on Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock, l'shem mitzvah, so that would be a violation of Baal Tosef. You're not allowed to add on a new mitzvah to the Torah. So that's exactly what Chazal Bavandu would say. Wait a second, well, how could you add on a new mitzvah? Isn't that a violation, outright violation of Baal Tosef? That's the Ramban learns Pshat in the Gemara's question. We don't know what the answer is yet, but that's what the Gemara's question was. Isn't it a violation of Baal Tosef? So there are clearly Rishonim who did not learn the Gemara that way. I know for a fact that Rishonim didn't learn the Gemara that way, and that's the Rashba. The Rashba in Rosh Hashanah Daf Tzayin's opinion is that Baal Tosef only applies when a Yochid adds on his own. But when the Beis Din is misaking something, the Koch Beis Din, that's not called Baal Tosef Bechlal. The Rashba says that the Torah itself instructs the Beis Din to introduce things. Beis Din are given the authority to add on new mitzvahs. They're given the authority to make gezeiros. They're given the authority to make mitzvahs. And therefore, whenever the Beis Din speaks, that by definition is not called Baal Tosef. So obviously that wasn't the Gemara's kasha. How did the Rashba know that's not called Baal Tosef? So the Rashba had an interesting raya. The Rashba says that, I'll prove to you that when Beis Din institutes something, it's not called Baal Tigra. If it's not called Baal Tigra, then it's probably not called Baal Tosef either. Baal Tigra and Baal Tosef are two sides of the same coin. What's this raya that when Beis Din institutes something, it's not called Baal Tigra? The Rashba says that when Beis Din institutes not to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shcharas B'Shabbos, isn't that a violation of Baal Tigra? The Torah says you're supposed to blow, and now we're not blowing. So isn't that called being gereya min ha-mitzvah? How could Beis Din do that? So the answer is that that's not called Baal Tigra. Baal Tigra is not violated when it's being authorized by the Beis Din. So the Shagasari Taka on Rosh Hashanah has a big pell on that Rashba. What in the world does that have to do with Baal Tigra? Baal Tigra means if a guy decides, I'm going to make a pair of tefillin with three batim in it. That's Baal Tigra. A guy gets up and he takes three minim instead of four minim. Hini b'chum zuma b'shei mitzvah shlosha minim instead of arba minim. That's called Baal Tigra. If I don't do a mitzvah, every time I don't do a mitzvah, that's Baal Tigra. Let's say that I'm supposed to learn. At 11:26, I'm supposed to be learning Torah. The mitzvah deraisa, of lamadatim or something, I'm supposed to learn Torah at 11:26. You're not doing anything else anyway. If a person's busy making a parnasa, a person's sleeping, eating, davening, doing a mitzvah, taking talk to his wife, so you have certain paturim that you don't have to learn that specific second. But nothing else is going on in your life. So 11:26, everyone has to be learning. So imagine there would be a person here who would be playing a game on his computer or something. Not Nashia, but imagine somebody would be doing that. Imagine a guy's drinking a cup, he's looking at his phone right now. Imagine a guy's daydreaming right now. So he's being mevatel the mitzvah deraisa of limud haTorah. So he's violating Baal Tigra. Every single time you're mevatel a mitzvah deraisa, you're violating Baal Tigra. So let's say a guy overslept this morning. I won't answer show of hands. Who missed my Kriyishma today? Don't tell me. Ain't another Mace Matsu Russia. Nobody missed my Kriyishma. So if a guy missed my Kriyishma, so he's over Baal Tigra. That's very hard to believe. The Chor Baal Tigra means that you try to minimize the mitzvah. You try to substitute a mitzvah by cutting away certain aspects of the mitzvah. That's Baal Tigra. So what was the Rashba's raya? The Rashba says, I'll bring your raya that there's no Baal Tosef for Beis Din because there's no Baal Tigra for Beis Din. So the Shai Sayyid, that wasn't Baal Tigra in the first place. So it's a very, very difficult Rashba. But Lamaisa, the Rashba sticks to his position. And he says that whenever the Beis Din does something, there's no Baal Tosef b'chlal. So according to the Rashba, what was the Gemara's kasha in Megillat Daf Yud Aleph? What was the big problem with instituting Purim? What was the big disaster? What was the big tragedy in instituting Purim? There wouldn't have been a Baal Tosef anyway. So the answer to the Rashba is, you have to read that Gemara carefully. The Gemara begins by telling us, Rabbanan, there were 48 Nevi'im for Klal Yisrael, and there were 7 Nevi'os for Klal Yisrael. There were many, many, many more, but there are 48 that we know by name, and there are 7 Nevi'os that we know by name. And throughout all the years of Ba'is Rishon, all the years of Nevuah, nobody had the chutzpah to add on a mitzvah to the Torah. Until Mordechai ben Yosef came, and all of a sudden they wanted to add the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah. So the Gemara says it was a big problem. How do we justify that? So why does the Gemara introduce with telling us the history about Nevuah? Why is that relevant to this? It's a true statement, but it's nothing to do with our discussion. According to the Ramban, we're learning a sugya of Baal Tosef. So why the need for the historical background about Nevuah? It's a nice piece of information. If you're taking a course in Bible about the history of prophecy in ancient Israel, so that's important to know how many Nevi'im there were. But if you're not particularly interested in such a course, then you're interested in learning the sugya of Baal Tosef, so why that introduction? So the Rashba seems to learn that the introduction is setting us up for the stage of the Kasha, because the question had nothing to do with Baal Tosef. It was an entirely different question. The question of the Gemara was, there's a din called Ein Navi Rasha L'Chadish Dover. The Gemara is out from Sukkim. The goal of a Navi is to transmit a Nevuah that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave. Either the Ribbono Shel Olam telling us something relevant about the future that we have to know, or he's giving us some kind of a tzivui what to do, or he's just giving us Musar. So there are jobs that the Nevi'im were given. They were given messages to relate to the people. But the one thing that a Navi was never given was to give no mitzvahs. That was already given to Moshe Rabbeinu. Eila mitzvahs, ein Navi Rasha L'Chadish Dover. So now, came along Mordechai v'Esther, written Baruch HaKodesh, and all of a sudden, they're starting new mitzvahs. All of a sudden, a new religion, the 614th mitzvah. So that's what the Gemara's problem was, that if Mordechai v'Esther would not have had Baruch HaKodesh, if Esther wasn't Baruch HaKodesh Nemra, then we wouldn't have had a problem. If Mordechai would have just simply been a rabbi, that wouldn't have bothered us. The reason why it was problematic is because Megillah was Baruch HaKodesh Nemra. If he had to come in with some kind of divine spirit, some kind of special, message from above, Kibbutz Kibbutz Yehudim, and they're telling us everyone's got to celebrate Purim, that smacks of Navi Rosh L'Chadish Dover. That's a big problem. So the Rashba learns that's what the Gemara's problem was. It had nothing to do about Tosef. It had to do with the Koach HaNavi being Mechadish. According to the Ramban, it was the Koach HaChocham. That's a problem. According to Rashba, it was Koach HaNavi. No matter how you slice it, what was the answer? So it was a Kasher. So Kasher L'Maisa. So what's the answer? So we live in a world of Maskanas. We live in a world that Purim was accepted. In the Havamina, Purim wasn't accepted. But in the Maskana, Purim was accepted. People who are real, real diehards, so they up. No, we pass like them Havamina. No Purim. Nobody gets it. Nobody does anything on Purim. Okay, but we do celebrate Purim, Baruch Hashem, in an appropriate manner. So what's their answer to the Kasha? So the Gemara asked the Kasha. The Gemara gives an answer. The Gemara says that it wasn't the Hosafa. What was going on in the days of Mordechai v'Esther was nothing new. There was nothing grandiose, nothing razzle-dazzle. They were simply applying a pre-existing Torah concept to a new situation. Baal Tosef, or Navi Rosh HaChadish, means that either the Bezin or the Navi can't make up something Yesh Me'ayin. Can't get up and say, we as the Chacham Institute, they have to jump up and down for 20 times and every Tuesday afternoon in the Shei Mitzvah. You're not allowed to do that. Or if a Navi would come and say, the Rav Hashem gave me a Nevuah, you have to stand on your head for 10 minutes, that would be a Navi Shach. You can't do that. But if the Beis Din, or the Navi, depending on whether you learn the Ramban or the Rashba, is simply looking into Chumash and saying, this Din D'Oraisa that was already ordained, it was already given to Klal Yisrael, this is a new way of fulfilling this mitzvah. Not that we're Mechadish Davar, this is a new application, a new historical event has happened, and we think the appropriate way to plug in a pre-existing Din D'Oraisa is such that not only is that legitimate, that's what they're supposed to do. So what does that mean? A Gval Ganes happened. A tremendous miracle happened. It was Yeshua from Haman. So what do we do about that? What's the Torah's response to Nisan? What does the Kodesh Baruch Hu want us to do when a miracle occurs? So we already have precedent for that. We look in the Chumash and we read Parshas B'Shalach and we realize that the Torah dedicates 30 Tzuvim to Az Yoshe Moshe. The Torah goes out of its way to tell us what the response of Moshe Ben Israel was to Kriyas Yamsuf. Why does the Torah tell us that? Why is that important for us to know? Just historically, no. There's a din that's there. The din that's teaching us the Dairis is that when Nisim happen, you're supposed to respond. You're not supposed to close your eyes to Nisim. You're supposed to respond to Nisim by praising the Ribbono Shel Olam. What kind of a nace warrants, what kind of a nace requires praising the Ribbono Shel Olam? So it has to be a nace that's either similar to Yamsuf or maybe more common than Yamsuf. It's like when we're learning Baba Kama. This is a real din. When we're discussing how to respond to miracles, we have to analyze the sugya no less seriously than we analyze the Shohan Nisit. No less seriously than we analyze a boar, a nation, another Mazik. You have to learn the sugya. The Torah has to decide. This is not a political question. This is not an emotional question. This is not just what you think is a cute thing to do. This is a halachic issue. What is the correct Torah din response to a nace? So we have a model in the Chumash of Kriyas Yamsuf, and we want to know, can we extrapolate to the events of Mordechai v'Esther? So we have to learn the sugi. You have to start to figure out, is it a kavachomer, is it a metzina, ben yinav? So let's figure it out. So we should know enough about those things from Baba Kama. So we have a nes of Kriyas Yamsov. So I want to know, if the nes of Kriyas Yamsov is a machayev of Shevach V'Hodoya, is the nes of Mordechai V'Yester a similar nes or not? So if I was sitting and making a kavachomer, I would have said, wait a second, hold the phone. There's a characteristic that the nes of Kriyas Yamsov had that is lacking by the nes of Mordechai V'Yester. What's the characteristic? One was a what? One was a nes nikla, it was a nes nistar. Kriyas Yamsov was an unbelievable hashros hashchina, zah nes nikla, that the water all of a sudden split. That's crazy, it's what never happens. Whereas what happened in the days of Mordechai V'Yester? It was a very, lefi derech hateva, very, very nes nistar. Esther gets chosen to be the queen, and Haman's in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he's in the right place at the right time, and he gets in the Seresh, and Mordechai goes in, and he tells the story, and chavonajat. Everything could be explained away. Any history book could relate everything that happened. And there were probably a lot of people at the time who didn't see the Yad Hashem. They saw this is all a Fidei Chateva. So sometimes you have a nace that's a nace Nikla, sometimes you have a nace that's a nace Nistar. So if I was sitting around the days of Mordechai V'Yester, I probably would have voted. If I was sitting at Lishkas HaGozos now trying to figure out what the din is of the Beis Din, wasn't yet in the Lishkas HaGozos. They were trying to figure out this is as the Beis HaMikdash was going to be rebuilt. So they're trying to figure out what the story is. Should we compare what just happened now, the great events that just happened now, to Az Yoshev Moshe, and be mechayev everyone to give Shevach V'Hodoya to Rabbeinu Shlomo? So probably some Rabbanim raised their hand and said, no, us are the Neis Nikla, and the others are the Neis Nista. So that svara was outvoted. Why was that svara outvoted? Because that is true, but what? That's irrelevant. Why does it matter whether it's Neis Nikla and Neis Nista? What is the source for the saying of Shevach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? You're saying Shevach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're not praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu because of the manifestation of Esros HaShechina. What is the nature of Azir Shev Moshe? It's not a manifestation of Shevach, it's more of a manifestation of what? Of Hodoah. It's a gratitude, it's a thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it is true that in the realm of Esros HaShechina, was there a greater Esros HaShechina in the days of Kriyas Yamsov than the days of Shushan? Absolutely, no question about it. What was the Nes Nigla, Vayiros, Hashem? That's true. That didn't really happen. In the days of Mordechai V'Yester, you could have explained it away easily. So there was much less of Esros HaShechina. But in terms of the dimension of Hodoah, which is the Mechayev of celebrating anyway, so there was a greater requirement of Hodoah in the days of Mordechai V'Yester than there was in the days of Kriyas Yamsov. Why is that? Because the Tzorah was greater. Because the need was greater. The Shas HaChach was greater. The need, the tremendous need for Yeshua in the days of Kriyas Yamsov was that if not for the Neis, we would have gone back to Egypt to build pyramids. So we'd still be slaves. Okay, it's a terrible thing. Being a slave is a terrible thing. But the Yeshua was not from annihilation. It was not from extermination. The Yeshua was Me'apis L'Chemus. Whereas Chalila, if Mordechai, if Haman would have been... Ready, can't remember the difference between the two. If Haman would have been... see how much the water impacted him. So if Haman would have been successful in the Gezerah, we wouldn't be sitting here today. If Paro would have been successful, we'd still be here. We wouldn't be sitting in Washington Heights. We'd be in Egypt building pyramids still. Okay. So life would have gone on. The Jewish people would have still been around. We would have just had a tough existence. But if Haman would have been successful, no Jews would be around today. So the Yeshua was much greater. The necessity for Akaras HaTorah was much greater. And therefore, Me'avdus L'cheiris of Mashira, Me'misa L'chaim L'kol Shekein. And therefore, forget, there's a Kal V'chaimah. Everyone knows Kal V'chaimah is a Midah Shetan Adreshes Bem. Maybe we even Motzi Mamun based on Kabachomis. Maybe we're not Ma'an Shaguf, but we pass Kiduch HaShabbos based on Kabachomis. All of them are based on Kabachomis. But we should know one Kabachomis, right? Everyone done Shachar. So it's the first of the Midah Shetan Adreshes Bem. So that's exactly what the Gemara Megillah says in the Fidala, that whatever the halachic problem was to celebrate Purim in the first place has been overcome, has been overturned by this Kal V'chaimah. So therefore, we have every right and every obligation to celebrate Purim because as a Kal V'chaimah, Misa L'chaim L'chol Shekin.
Can this idea of a mitzvah of saying Az Yoshev be connected to the Rabbeinu Yonah that we saw by Torah Mishiv Chassad?
That would be another way to defend saying Az Yoshev by heart. Maybe. I think we mentioned this even, no? Didn't we mention this? I think we did make mention of it. So it comes out that there was a very, very real connection between the events of Purim and Pesach, not just because it was cute and they were both geulas, but the whole matir of celebrating Purim, the whole mechayev of celebrating Purim, all emanates from Pesach. So maybe that's what the Gemara meant when it said, mesbach geula geula adif, that you want to keep together the two. You don't want to have Purim in the middle of the winter and then Pesach 6 months later. You want the two to be next to each other because the mamish ke'ein davar echad. They're the same thing. They're the same mechayiv. The whole mechayiv, the engine that's driving Purim is the celebration of Pesach. So that's such an important factor to keep the two of those geulas next to one another. That's a halachic consideration, and that halachic consideration is enough to overthrow ein mavir ala mitzvahs. And that's what we pass in halacha. So when all the dust settles, we pass in halacha that the Megillah is read in the second order, not in the first order. And even b'di'evit, if a person was somehow didn't realize that and read the Megillah today, he would have to repeat the Megillah in a month from now because he wasn't yaitzif b'di'evit because Chazal Mesachim dafke the second order. So once Chazal Mesachim the second order, is there any significance to Yudalit in the first order? Or is it just a nice Tuesday afternoon, day after President's Day? That doesn't really mean all that much. It's a good day for Shul lunch, but last week we lost that pizza, so we got a pizza today. Is there any halachic significance to this at all? So the Gemara in that Sugya Megillah writes that even though the Gabi Kriyas and Megillah, we paskin the second Adar, the Gemara says the Gabi the Yisrael Hesper B'tayin is Zeva Zeshavin. The Gabi the Isurim of fasting on Purim, and the Gabi the Isurim of having eulogies on Purim, all the things that are usually not done on a happy, joyous occasion. So those apply in full force to the first other as well. So even though Yudala today, including tomorrow, so Shusha Burm also was also Hesped and Tainis, so Yudala and Tezvav Vada Rishon, one is not allowed to have Hesped and Tainis as well. Is that what the Gemara really means? The Gemara says that Beferish. So there is a Machlekes of Rishonim, whether the Gemara means Kipshuto, or whether the Gemara has something else, a little bit of a different twist. So many of the Rishonim wrote the Gemara Mamash Kipshuto. There's an absolute real bona fide Isser to have Hesped B'tayinis today, to have Hesped B'tayinis tomorrow. There's a real bona fide Isser, you're not allowed to fast today, you're not allowed to have eulogies today, a real, real, real din of Hesped, an Isser Hesped B'tayinis today and tomorrow. And there are other Rishonim who say, no, that's not the context of the Gemara, because if you look back at the original Gemara, the Gemara was talking about the following situation. The Gemara says, you know, the olden days, nobody knew it's going to be a Shana Bu Baris until way, way late in the game. They didn't know, we have a calendar set up, so we know years in advance. We have a 19-year calendar, so we know exactly when every Shana Bu Baris is going to be until Mashiach comes. But in the olden days, when they used to declare the new moon based on the Riyasa Edim, so they didn't know when Rosh Chodesh is going to be. So for sure they didn't know when Shana Bu Baris is going to be. How did they ever know when the Shana Bu Baris is going to be? So as the days then realizes, it's Chodesh Shvat already, and it's still very, very cold outside. And they start to make a cheshbon and say, you know, based on the calculations, if we're going to have Pesach in 2 months from now, it's going to be freezing. The grain's not going to be ready for the Korban Omer, and it's going to be too cold outside, and it may not even reach the period of Tkufas Aviv already, so it's going to be, all the seasons are going to be off kilter. The Yom Tovim is supposed to coincide with the seasons. Pesach has to be B'chadish Aviv, and Sukkot has to be B'zman Asif. Everything is supposed to be at the right time, and we know just the way the Rebbe Shalom created the world is that there are 11-day difference between the lunar calendar and the solar calendar, and the seasons happen to follow the solar calendar. So we have to, 3-4 years, Pesach is going to be early. So imagine if we wouldn't have a leap year this year, Pesach would be in exactly a month from today. It would be, what's today's date? February 19th. So March 19th would be the first day of Pesach. That's cold, March 19th. And then next year, it would be, if we know Shana Bu Baris, it would be, how many days? It would be 11 days earlier. Next year would be March 8th. And then the following year would be February 12th. And eventually, it would be in the middle of January. That would be a big problem. We didn't feel with intercession. I think the only mind would be is that at least we can knock off yeshiva weekend, Pesach vacation at the same time. Send everyone to the hotels once instead of twice. So the people wouldn't want that. So the Beis Din had to sit down and the cheshbon b'zman hazeh, they would for sure factor that in. Can't have that happening. Okay. So the Torah tells us Shemor is Chodesh Aviv, so that's a mitzvah in the Torah. The Beis Din has to make a cheshbon every year, every couple of years, and figure out when it's appropriate to add a new month. So they're not going to know that early in the year. They're going to have to figure out a way. And the Gemara says you have to ask the farmers because they understand the crops a little bit better, and they'll tell you about the seasons, and they'll tell you about what the weather patterns are. So you have to make a lot of calculations. So late in the game, they're going to figure out when, if it's going to be a Shana Bu Baris. How late is late? So the Gemara says that you better decide before Chodesh Nisan, that's for sure. If you can't have 3 days before Pesach and decide, no, sorry, Shana Bu Baris, you know, well, that's no good. The process is a Chodesh Tel Chaver. Once Nisan comes, it's a done deal. So you have a couple of weeks and months to play around with. Once Beis Din comes to the conclusion that it's going to be a Shana Bu Baris, then they have to inform the people because you have to start sending messages out. So the same guys who go on horseback for Rosh Chodesh, so they have to go out and telling people that, by the way, it's a Shana Bu Baris. The problem is that those guys on the horseback don't travel fast enough for us. We don't have all those wonderful milas that we have in today's world, right? We don't have the ability to destroy the whole world in 1 second with one button of a push. We don't have the ability to spread Lashon Hara and Vavaza to Mirchacham en masse, you know, to 10 billion people with one. We don't have those special schosn that we have as man as that. So in the olden days, everything went much slower. So you have to send out the horses, so it takes a while for the horses to get to where they got to go. So it could be that there's this far-flung Jewish community, someone that's in the middle of Bergen Field, in the middle of Mamish, middle of nowhere, and they think that it's not going to be Shana Muberes. They have no reason to believe it's going to be Shana Muberes. So they come to Purim, so comes February 19th, and we're dancing in the streets, and we're celebrating, we read the Megillah, we're Eshel Lachmanis, and we're having the parties, and everything, everyone's sitting down by the Suda, and all of a sudden, some guy comes in off the horse, and they come saying, sorry guys, today's Purim Katan, huh? Just kidding, next month is Purim Gadol, next month is the real Purim to Shana Muberes. So that's what the Mishnah describes. The Mishnah says, Gavat, what do we do? So the Torah says, you got to wait till next month to celebrate Purim. So it was all a waste, it was all Purim about Tola. So in that context, so the Gemara says, the way Semer Shonim read is that for the next 2-3 hours, don't go have a fast, don't go have a hesped, right, the next 2-3 hours. Since it was already kind of Purim-y atmosphere, so, you know, let the day kind of, you know, the spirit keep on going, and don't have a hesped betaynus, because you already thought it was Purim. It was a mistake, it was all a Purim of Atol, it was all a Mekav Tos in Purim, but Bechiyah Gavim, it's not right just to stop the day in the middle and then turn into a sad day. But let's say I know in advance that it's not going to be Purim. So some Rishonim say, why do you have to have an assessment of time? It's not Purim. If you're not reading the Megillah anyway, you're not having a suit anyway, you're not giving Shalach Moshe, you're not having giving a toast of Yoinim, so why don't you have a assessment? So have a assessment of time. What's the problem? So when the Gemara says that you can't have a assessment of time, that was talking about the one crazy, unique case where they goofed and they began to celebrate thinking that it was really the real Purim. So the Shulchan Aruch in the very, very last Siman Arachayim, there's one Siman Shulchan Aruch about Purim Katan, so he quotes both opinions in the Rishonim. He quotes one, some Rishonim will say that there's absolutely nothing. That's also today. Today's a regular Tuesday. And according to the other Rishonim, no, there really is a bona fide issa has to be the time. So Shulchan Aruch quotes that even though there are two opinions about this, but somehow, Safik Tachron Lekula. When it comes to Tachron, nobody says Tachron today. Why does nobody say Tachron today? Because Tachron is always associated with days that he made Tzara, potentially, he made Rachim, etc. So whenever there's any good excuse not to say Tachron, any good, you know, happy kind of a day, so we don't say Tachron. So that's what the Minig Yisrael is, that nobody says Tachron today. Even though it's not clear there's a real bona fide issa has been betaynus today, but Tachron we don't say. And not only do we not say Tachron, but the Minig is that we up the ante a little bit also. There are many days on the calendar that we don't say Tachron, but we do say Lamenatzeach, say Tu B'Shvat. So what's the great, unbelievable Simcha Tu B'Shvat? I have no idea. What's the great, unbelievable Simcha Lag B'Omer? We're not even sure exactly what that Simcha is all about. There are a lot of days on the calendar. Pesach Sheni, some say L'Horiz V'Miyam. There are a lot of funny days on the calendar. But we're not quite sure how happy we are in those days. So Tachra we don't say, but Lam Netzach we do say. The emitting of Lam Netzach is reserved for the real McCoy. Shchaydesh, Chanukah, Purim, you know, or Pesach, those are the days you'll leave out Lam Netzach. So Purim Katan got up to the high list. Purim Katan, and Trisha Purim Katan tomorrow also. So davening today was not only 2 minutes short, it was 2.5 minutes short, depending on how fast you say Lam Netzach. So because of that, I rescheduled my whole carpool this morning. Usually right after davening, I pick up one person, I figured I had an extra 2.5 minutes this morning. At the rate of how fast Tachanun on a regular Tuesday is said, with Lam Netzach together, it was probably an extra 30 seconds I had. That was about it. So you have a little bit of extra time today. So that's the minute. That's the Shulchan Aruch quotes the minutes. How do we pask it under Shaila? Is there an Issa Hesped B'Tainus or not? So the Ramah writes here. The Ramah writes, that minig is that we dafka do not give Hespedim today. We don't fast today. We are machmer to treat it like a real Yom Simcha. And all the Surim of Hesped B'Tainus, Medina de Gemara, we pask in our Rasa. Like we're over the Rishonim probably, that Medina de Gemara one's not allowed to have a Hesped B'Tainus. There are certain days of the year we don't have Hespedim and Tainus has been hugging. This is a real din, according to those Rishonim who say that that's what the Gemara is talking about. So now there's a further machlokes of Rishonim, assuming that this is correct, if we paskin that we shouldn't have Hesped B'Tainus, does that mean we have to do anything positively or no? So there's a Tosfos in Masechet Berachos, Daf Mem Tes, that points out that just because a certain day is not allowed to fast on, doesn't necessarily mean there's mitzvah v'suda. For example, Rosh Chodesh. You're not allowed to fast in Rosh Chodesh. The Rambam has a very unique sheet that the Rambam seems to say that there's an issue that arises in a fast in Rosh Chodesh. Where does it stand in the Chumash? It says in Parshas Baloscha, by the blowing of the Chatzotzeros, it says, V'yom simchaschem v'adechem v'roshichachachem. The Torah lumps together, Rosh Chodesh and Yom Tov in the same breath. So because the Mishnah writes, the Rambam seems to hold that Rosh Chodesh is considered to be like a quasi-Yom Simcha, even on love of the Araisa. So you would not be permitted to fast in Rosh Chodesh min HaTorah. Others say the Yisra of fasting on Rosh Chodesh is the Rabbanon, some say it's only a minig. So for some, you're not allowed to fast on Rosh Chodesh, that's for sure. So Tosfos points out, but you're not mechifti to suda. You don't have to wash and bench on Rosh Chodesh, because the Gemara says in Brachas Memtes that if you forgot to say Yal V'Yavo on Rosh Chodesh, you don't repeat the benching. Unlike Shabbos and Yom Tov, if you forgot to say Yal V'Yavo, you do repeat the benching. Because in those times, Shabbos and Yom Tov, there's a mitzvah suda. So therefore, the lack of adding the mention of the day is ma'akev, and therefore you have to repeat the benching. Rosh Chodesh, yiboy ochli boy l'ochli. You're not mechifti to suda. So Tosfos says, you're not mechifti to suda, but you not allowed to fast, so that's not a stira. So it says, you don't have to wash, you don't have to have challah, you don't have to have a suda. You can have an apple, you can have a bigger potato, just make sure you can have a milkshake, you make sure you don't fast the whole day Rosh Chodesh, and that's okay. You want to have a suda, that's a nice thing to do, but you're not really mechuyav to have a suda Rosh Chodesh. That's what Taisus points out, that there's a machlekes between two different midrashim, whether money that you spend on Suda Rosh Chodesh, whether that comes back to you or not. The Gemara says in the second Megal Beitza that any money that you spend on Shabbos meals is taken off the Cheshbon. Rav Shlomo decides on Rosh Hashanah how much money he's going to give you for the year. So there are certain expenses that are different Cheshbonis. Whatever you spend on Shabbos food doesn't count from the Cheshbon. Whatever you spend on Yom Tov food doesn't count from the Cheshbon. The Gemara says whatever you spend on tuition doesn't count for the Cheshbon. Most of our expenses. But it doesn't say where you spend your mortgage, doesn't count. Nothing more doesn't say. But the Gemara says that whatever you spend in shops and yonta food is a different cheshbon. So Tosfos calls two different Mamar Chazal, two different Midrashim. What about Rosh Chodesh food? If a guy eats a nice meal in Rosh Chodesh, is that going to be part of his, he's going to have to pay for that, or the Baruch Hashem is going to give him a special matana for that? It's not clear. So when the Suda's Purim Katan is Baba Cheshbon, that I can't tell you. But so you see from that Tosfos that just because there's an Issa Kindness doesn't necessarily mean there's a Mitzvah Suda. So now the Ramah quotes a further Machlekes, the Misharim quote a further Machlekes, B'si Yosef quotes a further Machlekes about within those Shittas that say you're really not allowed to fast today. Me'ik, 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 we're not allowed to fast today. Is there a Chayva Suda today or not? So again, Kriyas HaMegillah is not. Matos HaVyayim is not. Shalach Manos is not. But is there a Mitzvah Chayva Suda? So some Misharim say yes. The Chazal say that there's Nisa Tainis, so that means there's some degree of Simcha on Purim Katan, and that the degree of Simcha is a Mechayev of a Suda, so you have to have a Suda today. What constitutes a Suda? So Mestama, according to that, those we've shown him, a Suda means like a Purim Suda. It doesn't have to be Mestama, it's a Katan, it doesn't have to be so big, but it has to be Ke'en a Purim Suda. So that's what the Rishayim call from Rabbeinu Chilmi Paris, one of the Balei HaTosfos. We know where he lived in Paris. Rabbeinu Chilmi Paris. So he was one of the Rebbeim of the Rebbe of the Maram in Rutenberg. So Rabbi Yechim of Paris, the middle of the period of the Balei HaTosfos. So he's quoted by saying that he used to gather his chaverim together, his talmidim together, and they would have a suda Purim Katan. They would make a special suda for Purim Katan. So the Ramah seems to say that we're not really mechuyav to do that. It's not, we don't really paskin that far that there's a real chiyav suda. That's why most people are not so careful about this. But the Ramah writes, it's a nice idea. Tov lev Mishnah Talmud, the Ramah writes, it's a good thing. So lechet chiva, those who were able to make the sudas, the Ramah Toy. The Mishnah Berurah also writes that many have the practice of having a little bit of a ribui sudas on Purim Katan. So what would be necessary for that ribui sudas to be really, to mean anything? So Mishtama, it should be Ke'en, a little bit of a Purim Suda. So what's meant a Purim Suda? So the Rambam writes in the end of Hilchos Megillah that a Purim Suda has to have basar. You have to have meat at a Purim Suda. How did the Rambam know that? Doesn't say that in the Gemara anywhere. How do you know? Maybe you can make a milchik Purim Suda. So the Rambam got it from Suda's Yontif, because the Rambam Shita, based on his way of reading the Gemara Pesachim, is that a Yontif Suda has to have basar, because the word Simcha, in Simcha the Rambam holds, ain't Simcha a little bit basar. So just as a Yom Tov Suda has to have basar, and a Purim Suda is, you may Mishti V'Simcha, is you may Yom Tov, it's like a quasi Yom Tov, so it has to have basar as well. So it's interesting because the Shulchan Aruch in Uchaz Purim quotes this Rambam, that you have to have basar for Purim Suda, and the Shulchan Aruch in Uchaz Yom Tov doesn't quote the Rambam in Uchaz Yom Tov. The Shulchan Aruch disagrees with that Rambam. The Beis Yosef writes that he doesn't know where the Rambam got it from, you have to have basar in Yom Tov. The Beis Yosef writes, you can have a milchik suda on Yom Tov. If you like milchik, you can eat milchik on Yom Tov. So with the later poskim, the Magen Avraham Mishnah Berurah say, you should really follow the Rambam. Lechet chila, you should try to have a basar at every Yom Tov meal. A lot of people in Shavuos are not so careful about this, but if you follow the Shittas of Rambam, so every Yom Tov meal should really be a fleishik meal. In Shavuos, the Ramah writes, there was a minhag to eat milchiks in Shavuos, but the Ramah writes explicitly that the old minhag was, they would eat milchiks a little bit, and then they would follow it with fleishiks. So nobody ever in Europe, the minhag was never to have milchiks to the expense of fleishiks. The minhag was to have both. You have a little bit of milchiks, and then you switch over the tablecloth, you switch over your chalas, you wash out your mouth, and then you bring out the meat. Later generations, either in Europe or in America, so somehow the fleshy part got lost in the shuffle. That the milk became so yummy and delicious, and people were so worried about their cholesterol, so all of a sudden, so they're worried about their cholesterol, so they fill themselves up with all these fattening cheeses and cheesecake and everything to be, I'd say, make sure they don't eat anything unhealthy like red meat. So they, so that was the many that became in some places. But those who followed the Magen Avraham, the Mishnah Berurah and the Rambam, that a fleshy meal is really a necessity on Yom Tov, they would insist on all the Yom-Tif meals, at least some of the Yom-Tif meals, being fleishiks. So the Shulchan Aruch is a little bit strange, because in Uchaz Yom-Tif, he doesn't quote the Rambam. He seems to assume you can get away with a fish or milk meal. And in Uchaz Purim, he quotes the Rambam. You have to have a mamash of fleishik meal for Purim Sudha. When we speak about fleishiks, for either for Yom-Tif or for Purim, so there's a further machlok as Zechor, and what constitutes basar. Does basar mean basar behema? It's got to be like a real flesh, mamash meat from an animal. Or even chicken would be good enough. In Uchaz Bas B'chalav, so chicken is considered to be like meat mid-Rabbanan, but it's not really, really like meat. Well, Savash Gvi B'chalav Imo, that means real B'sa B'hema. Chicken is only mid-Rabbanan. So can we use chicken to fulfill an obligation of meat? That's not clear. So there is some more Machmir and Yom Tov to try to have a little bit of B'sa B'hema. You don't have to have so much. You have a little bit of real fleshiks. And there are some for Purim, so also a Machmir to make sure there's a little bit of real meat at the table, not just chicken or turkey, something like that. So this is already chumra, gabi chumra. To tell a guy that he has to have his perm, the suddas perm katan, that according to most Rishon probably doesn't exist, that he has to have dafka basa, which we're not even sure that's true. We're not even trying to define basa. So I guess we'll make a little pizza. I guess this is the pizza probably good enough for shasar chak. Those want to have shwam afterwards can go have treat themselves. But the ingredient then is probably okay with something else. There's another ingredient that's also on the menu for Suda's Purim. That's in the Ram's description, that Suda's Purim has to have yayin as well. And again, this is also, the Ram says, this is the model of the Yom Tov. The Gemara says you have to have yayin at a Yom Tov meal. So this discussion is only true for those people who are permitted legally to drink wine. If one is not allowed to drink wine, then I'm not supposed to be telling you to drink wine. So in America, last we checked, the age of drinking is 21. So anyone under 21, this is irrelevant for them. They're not allowed to violate the law. So they have to follow the Mekilim. The Mekilim Mar, Shlomo Zalman says that for the purposes of Yayin and Yom Tov, one can be Yaitzah with grape juice. So those who want to be Makbid, to fulfill the Bas of Yayin today, so can fulfill it with grape juice. Doesn't say Mefarish that you have to have Bas of Yayin, Siddhas Purim Kotel. But even if Siddhas Purim Kotel, it's strongly recommended to those who are under, recommended, it's required, those under 21 have to drink grape juice, they can't drink wine. Those over the age of 21, so should fulfill the dinner bus of a yayin if they want to with real wine. And the shear is a revius, that's it, no more than a revius. That's the shear for Yom, that's the shear for Purim. And to be yotzi ad layada, so you have to drink one drop more than that. So you drink a revius plus one drop. So it's 3.0001 ounces, that's good enough. I'd say the din of yayin, that's good enough for choladeus. Any of those days that I'm interested in quoting, and that's what one's supposed to do. It goes without saying that even on regular Purim, there's absolutely no hefta kihuzeh to do what some people think they're allowed to do. It's shalik adin, it's shalik halacha, it's against everything the Torah stands for. One has to be very, very careful not to get drunk or do anything inappropriate on Purim Gvul, how much more so on Purim Katan. So again, but as we get closer to regular Purim, we'll reiterate the significance of that message as well. But Purim Katan should be no tainus, no hesped, no tachon, no lam nezech. And those who want to have a little bit of a suda, so tov le mishtetami.
Purim Gadol.
Yeah.
If you just don't like wine, can you just have grape juice?
If you're not going to like wine, you have no choice. You have to rely on Shlomo Zalman. We rely on Shlomo Zalman for more serious shaylos than the wine and
Purim. No, even if you're above 21, I'm saying.
So if you have no choice, if you don't like wine, if you like wine, you drink grape juice.
Okay.
Is there a specific time to have a suda?
You mean for Purim? Well, the Gemara says that the Purim suda has to be by Yom. You can't have the Purim suda by Laila. So it has to be by Yom. So I guess the pattern has to be Purim Kavi suda. So we have till Matar Shkia today, till 5:30.
So you
can have in the morning, you can have in the afternoon, you can have it before Shkia. So again, I'm not saying anyone's mechuyev to go have a fleshik suda today. But those who want to fulfill Tov Le Mishnah Tamid, so they should try to do that today. The Mishnah Berurah writes that even the Machmirim Shem Machmirim are not Machbed on Shushan Purim Katan. That already is a little bit too far. So we don't say Tachim tomorrow, we don't say Lamentech tomorrow, but they insist on having. Then the Mishnah Berurah quotes a strange thing, I think, from Lavush, who says that even if you live in a walled city, you don't have tomorrow, you have today. Why is that? Because today is Samadhi Kapurim for everybody. What's the minute? Anyone know? Anyone living in Yerushalayim on a Shushan Purim Katan? No one remember? Okay, I have no idea what they do in Shushan Purim Katan in Yerushalayim. Whether they have their mini suddas today or they have the mini suddas tomorrow. I have to check. I'll call Yerushalayim to find out what they do. Okay, good. Any last questions about this burning halakhic issue of Shushan Purim Katan? Yeah.
What's the source for anyone giving a mitzvah?
What's the source for it? If you hold it's deraisa, Tasha says that it's deraisa. Where does it come from? Is it part of mitzvah bol yochel tach mitzena? Some say it's part of that. Shmat mitzvah mitzvahs. It's a matzah. I'll take a matzah and mitzvahs. Okay, yeah.
What about the other mitzvahs ayom? What about the other mitzvahs?
There are no mitzvahs ayom today. Just have to learn Torah today. That's the most important mitzvahs ayom. So just as by a sudas purim gadol, the post came right, before you sit down to a sudas purim, so you have to, like, who the mice ayra? You have to have ayra zu Torah. So you can't just stop sit down to a sudas. So we had a little bit of ayra, a little bit of light. So where's the pizza?